Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Antiquities Advisory Board conference call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we'll conduct a time for comments. Instructions will be given at that time. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star then zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to host, Mr. Jim Roussett. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. This is the meeting of the Antiquities Advisory Board. Today's date is April the 14th, 2020, and the time is, let me get the exact time here, 2:01 p.m. Pursuant to the governor's executive order to avoid gatherings of more than 10 people and the governor's March 16th, 2020 suspension of certain provisions of the Texas Open Meetings Act, the April 14th, 2020 meeting of the Antiquities Advisory Board will be held by telephonic conference call as authorized under Texas Government Code Section 551.125. Members of the public will have access by calling 1-844-721-7241, access code number 247-8886, toll free. An electronic copy of the agenda and a copy of the meeting materials are available at www.thc.texas.gov/teleconferences. A recording of the meeting will be available after April the 15th, 2020. To obtain a recording, please contact Esther Brickley at 512-463-5768. The members may discuss and or take action on any of the items listed on the agenda. I want to welcome everybody to our meeting today, and I'd like to start off by asking the board members to state their name and their position on the board as I call your last name. Garcia?
Lilia Garcia, vice chairman.
and a commissioner.
A commissioner for Texas Historical Board.
Okay, thank you. Limbacher. Is Lori with us?
Hello?
Yeah, Lori?
Yes.
Okay, could you state your name, your full name and your position on the board?
Sure. Laurie Limbacher, Texas Historical Commission architect.
Los?
John Los. I'm the president of the Council of Texas Archaeologists.
Alston?
This is Norman Alston of Dallas. I am a board member and an architect. And, I'm a board member. That's it.
Boyd?
This is Doug Boyd. I'm a board member and representing the Texas Archaeological Society.
Troll?
This is Waldo Trell. I'm an archaeologist representing the state agency archaeologist.
Lewis?
Rick Lewis here, an architect and a member of the board.
Utley?
Dan Utley, historian, Texas State University, member of the AAB.
Ward?
Bob Ward, historian, Travis County Historical Commission.
Okay, this is great. We have all the members present. We obviously have a quorum, and the meeting is open. That's wonderful. And in addition to THC Commissioners Lilia Garcia and Lori Limbacher, I believe we have Vice Chair John Crane listening in. And, John, if you're there, we welcome you to listen to our meeting. John will not be participating as he's not a member of the Antiquities Advisory Board. In terms of the staff, we have Brad Jones, Director of the Archaeology Division, with us. And, Brad, can you introduce any other staff that are part of the call?
Thank you, Jim. I'll be happy to. Brad Jones, Archaeology Division Director. We have Emily Dilla, one of our staff archaeologists and the reviewer for South Texas and San Antonio. On the line. Are you there, Emily?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. And I also believe we have our director, Mark Wolf, of the Historical Commission, also present on the line. Is that correct, Mark?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
And I believe that is all the staff who are on the line.
Okay. Thank you, Brad. I need to note that we've received several comments from the public about our meeting today. We thank those that have taken the time to compose their comments and submit them to the Antiquities Advisory Board. Many of the comments concern elements of the health and safety code pertaining to cemeteries. Our meeting today only addresses the archaeological permit application before us pursuant to the Antiquities Code of Texas. And the role of the Antiquities Advisory Board is to make a recommendation to the Executive Committee of the Texas Historical Commission, who will make the final decision about the permit. Okay, the second agenda item is the Alamo permit. We're going to have a presentation, possible action on the Alamo archaeological permit application for the Mission San Antonio de Valero / Alamo burial exhumation 41BX6 Bexar County, submitted by the General Land Office. And Brad, you want to give us some information about this agenda item?
Yes, thank you, Jim. This is Brad Jones, Archaeology Division Director. Permit application was brought to us by the General Land Office on for exhumation of the four recognized burials which have been encountered in the Alamo Church during the investigations to examine the architecture. The permit is being applied for by Dr. Steve Tomka of Robba Kissner Incorporated. And he is here with us, as well as Brittany McLean, who is a bioarchaeologist with the team, as well as Christy Nichols with the Alamo Trust as their archaeologist. I'm, in lieu of going over what is in your packet, I'm going to go ahead and ask Dr. Tomka to give a brief overview of the project and the permit application first, and then we will follow up with comment after.
Thank you so much, Brad. This is Steve Tomka. In opening my remarks, I would like to take time to thank Chairman Brusseth and the members of the Antiquities Advisory Board for considering this permit request. It is an important project, and we greatly appreciate the extra effort that the Advisory Board and the Executive Committee is going to hear this request. I would also like to thank the board members and commissioners who have taken the time during the fall of last year to come out and visit the archaeological site during the heat of the most work that was occurring at the site, as well as Dr. Brad Jones and Emily Dila for regularly visiting the site and giving us some very useful advice and great perspectives on how the archaeology was ongoing and continuing. In the remainder of the presentation, I would like to ask Christy Nichols, who is the archaeologist at the Alamo, to provide, if I may, a broad context to the archaeological excavations, which are really in support of the larger issues of preservation of the site itself and two of the principal structures, the church and the long barrack. Following that presentation, and I will speak to the summaries of the archaeological findings and the steps moving forward. Christy, if you're there.
Yes, I'm here. Thank you very much, Steve. I just wanted to briefly talk about the preservation work that's ongoing right now. The archaeological investigations associated with the architectural preservation of the historic structures at the Alamo is just the initial work providing essential information to the preservation and restoration architects who will develop the necessary remedy to ensure that the iconic structures stand the test of time and to continue to tell the story of Texas. Recent investigations of the church walls have revealed that there is much to be concerned about regarding their integrity. GPR, thermal imaging, borescope, and other analyses have shown that there are voids within the walls, as well as damage to the stones and mortar as a result of salt deposits related to the rising damp. The preservation team needs to examine the condition of the below-ground components of the structure to determine what are the next steps to preserve the church for another 300 years. Each unit inside the church was placed to examine specific engineering questions related to the structural integrity of the historic building, and any repairs made to the above ground portion of the structure would be in vain unless the foundation can be examined and studied to determine what the underlying issues need to be taken into account. As the Alamo Conservator often says, Pam Rosser, she has often stated that the Alamo Church is a sick patient. These investigations, both architectural and archaeological, are vital to finding the cure. The team has considered many options to avoid the need to exhume the burials encountered during the excavations we've encountered to date, but all these had potential downfalls. The lack of data concerning the foundation of the structure could ultimately result in inadequate preservation plans, while the insertion of sensors without additional excavations can result in damage to the in-situ burials. It was determined that the exhumation of the remains encountered during the initial excavations would be the most appropriate and respectful option to prevent undue damage to the remains, while allowing the historic architects to make the best informed decision regarding the long-term care of a place that means so much to so many people here in Texas. I would just like to say that the GLO and the Alamo Trust would definitely appreciate the time that you guys have taken to consider the archaeological permit presentation that's being presented today. So, thank you.
All right. So, if I may, unless there are questions, I'll go ahead and summarize now the archaeological work to date briefly and then the steps moving forward. As you all know, the archaeological investigations in and around the Alamo Church itself began in the fall of 2019 under Texas Antiquities Committee permit number 8713. Three 2x2-meter excavation units were positioned around and outside of the perimeter of the building, and five units were located inside of the footprint of the church. Board members should refer to Figure 1 for the locations of these units, and that figure is shown in the permit application packet. For these excavation units, units 4, 2, 4, 5, and 6 have identified evidence of intentional burials comprised of fragments of disarticulated human bones. Burial 1 was discovered in excavation unit 4 at 49 centimeters below datum. Here the datum is measured 10 centimeters above the floor of the church itself, the pavers. The fragmentary remains form a concentration of several small bones that appear to represent a single infant or young child. The remains may represent a disturbed burial with elements subsequently gathered and reburied. And we can elaborate on the context of it during the discussion phase. Burial 2 was discovered in Unit 5 at 83.5 centimeters below datum. A soil color change, coupled with fragments of hardware and nails, and fragmented disarticulated human bones within a hexagonal area comprised the evidence of a burial. Burial 3 was discovered in excavation unit 6 at 119.5 centimeters below datum. It was the deepest burial discovered to date on the site. The remains consist of a tightly clustered group of adult remains that appear to represent an intentional, possibly secondary burial. Burial 4, the fourth of the burials, was discovered in excavation unit 2 at 57 centimeters below datum. A small number of disarticulated human bones appear to represent the remains of a single subadult individual. Upon discovering these remains, and most of these discoveries were made October, November, and December, primarily November and December of last year, the human bones were covered with clean muslin and soils from the vicinity of the remains, and no further inspection or analysis of these remains has been undertaken since these actions were taken. Based on excavations along the outside of the church walls, it is anticipated that each of these excavation units with containing human remains will need to continue to be excavated to a depth of 175 centimeters below the surface to reach the base of the foundation. The exposure of the face of the foundation in each of these units will allow the assessment of the condition of the foundations, as well as the installation of instrumentation to collect information on daily, weekly, monthly, and seasonal variations in the conditions affecting the foundation of the church. This information will form the basis of detailed preservation plans and actions to be implemented in the future, as outlined briefly by Christy. To allow for these activities to take place, the aforementioned human remains present in these excavation units will need to be exhumed. The excavation of the remains will be completed by a team of highly trained bioarchaeologists with master degrees in bioarchaeology and human osteology from universities recognized as leaders in the field. The excavation of the remains will follow the human remains treatment protocols and procedures developed by the Alamo Mission Archaeological Advisory Committee formed prior to the inception of the archaeological investigations. exhumed human remains, burial-associated artifacts, and souls surrounding the remains will be stored together until the time of the reburials. Analysis of these remains will include the collection of anthropometric cranial and postcranial measurements and observations. The principal goal of these measurements and observations is to collect information related to the establishing the age at death, the sex, and if possible, the ancestral affiliation of the remains. No destructive analyses of human remains will be conducted. The remains will be stored in a highly secured Alamo collection vault until the completion of the analyses and the overall preservation-related work. The reinterment of the remains, burials, and disarticulated remains will take place within the footprint of the church in a specifically designated location. Reinterment process will follow the procedures defined by the Alamo Mission Advisory Archaeological Advisory Committee. These procedures were laid out at the beginning of the archaeological project before any excavations have taken place, and we have been strictly following those guidelines throughout the excavations. With this, I conclude my presentation and mentioning that Brittany McLean, our lead bioarchaeologist, physical anthropologist, is on the line, and Christy is on the line. We are ready to answer any follow-up questions you may have with regards to the proposed archaeological work.
Brad, does that conclude the introduction of this permit application? Brad?
Sorry, Jim. I was on mute. I just wanted to add that the THC staff have reviewed the application, and we did have a series of comments concerning some of the methodological procedures that we have transmitted to Robert Kistner for review. These focused on some of the issues related to how they were going to be exhumed and some of the processes, particularly photography, that would be involved, as well as a lot of the analytical techniques that would be used to determine issues such as potential ancestry, age, sex, and other aspects of each individual. We have already received a response from Robert Kistner addressing many of these issues, and we have also received from them a full set of CVs and staff qualifications for the project, which we also requested. So I just wanted to have that out there that we, in general, find the application acceptable. However, we would want all of these issues addressed prior to considering releasing the permit.
Okay, that concludes your introduction?
Yes.
Okay, at this point, we're going to take public comments, and we ask that the public comments only be pertain to the archaeological permit application that is on the agenda. Also, we will not be responding to individual comments or answering questions at this time, but we'll use this as an opportunity for members of the Antiquities Advisory Board to hear public concerns before they vote. And finally, I ask that comments be limited to 3 minutes or less. And at this point, Esther, I'll turn it over to you, and you can coordinate with the moderator on our public comments.
Yes, Vicki, are you there?
I am. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to make a comment, please press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad. Once again, if you have a comment, please hit 1-0. And one moment, you have quite a few here. Art Martinez, your line is open, please.
Yes. Hi, my name is Art Martinez. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, I'm attorney for the Tapilam Koltekan Nation and the Alamo Defenders Descendants Association. Wanted to highlight a couple of concerns of ours. We oppose granting of this permit at this time. We've had an ongoing dispute with Alamo Trust and GLO over their exclusion of lineal descendants on their archaeological advisory committee. This is the specific situation which those concerns were raised so long ago. to highlight the fact that analogous sites such as Maverick Plaza, which is the first site of Mission Valero, included lineal descendants, including Tapilam Toltec Nation and the Alamo Defenders Descendants Association, as with Milam Park, Santa Rosa Hospital, and other sites in downtown San Antonio. We believe that lineal descendants and descendants associations should be included on the advisory committee. It's simply an advisory committee, as is because it is the archaeological practice. It's the common custom. It's what's done on every other site. And this exclusion is just blatant, and we believe it's in violation of the law. So we would ask that if you were to consider this permit, that you require that lineal descendants be included in the process. We also object to the fact that DNA analysis will not be conducted. Again, on this site, both the Alamo Defenders Descendants Association and the Tapilam Toltec Nations have expressed a desire for DNA analysis. Both associations who can trace their ancestry to the mission have a large, if not a majority, of their members with DNA being conducted. I know there's preliminary discussions of putting together a Coltecan DNA database. This is our one opportunity to determine to be able to test for lineal descendancy through DNA testing. So we would ask that would be required. And frankly, just we would ask the committee to not allow this exclusion and discrimination, which is the basis of all this hostility, the basis of all this public dissent, and as you know, is not standard archaeological practice. The standard practice is to have inclusion on these advisory committees. We respectfully ask that the committee just require that, to consider that thoughtfully. Think of if your ancestral cemetery, if your grandparents or great-grandparents were being dug up and studied, how it would affect you and how you would want to participate and be able to give input on reburial and respectful handling of those remains. And the fact that being blatantly excluded and having others, outsiders, federally recognized Indian tribes, for example, with no historical connection to the mission, speak on your behalf would be insulting. It would be outrageous. Not in the spirit of what this project is trying to accomplish. And so we ask for that consideration.
That's 3 minutes of time. Thank you very much for your comments. Ready for the next commenter?
Yeah. Yes. Forrest Baez, your line is open.
Yes. My name is Forrest Baez. I am a direct Alamo Defender descendant of Andrew Kent, Memorial 32. I would like to let the committee know that I am in full support of this application for the four remains that have been found previously. I believe it is imperative to the preservation of the church and to the preservation of the remains as outlined in the request. I just wanted to give that part to mine, and I believe that the handling, the professionalism of the people involved we'll handle this in the proper order as stated. Thank you all very much.
Thank you for your comments.
We're
ready for the next one, Seth.
Absolutely. Charisma Villarreal, your line is open.
Hello?
Yes.
Can everybody hear me?
Yes,
thank you. My name is Charisma Villarreal. I'm a seventh-generation Native Texan. I, too, am also an Alamo Defenders descendant. My Alamo ancestor was Gregorio Esparza. He was the only one that was permitted a Christian burial, if you remember from your Texas history. I am calling in today so that I could request that you deny or delay the permit to the General Land Office. The Alamo should be maintained, yes, it's very true, but not at the cost of disturbing the dead. The Catholic Church may have sold the cemetery land, but the land was never desanctified. Those souls must remain undisturbed. If the permit is given, I'm asking that the DNA testing be done so that we may know if the remains are, in fact, our family members. It is My family is also from the Canary Islands, so many of my ancestors are buried there in Alamo Plaza because they were part of the entire Alamo area. So it disturbs me that their remains will be disturbed with no type of ceremony, and that I would not have any say in that. So I would just ask again that the permit is denied, or at very, very best delayed until the lawsuit has gone through and final judgment has been given by a judge. Again, the land was never desanctified by the Catholic Church, so I think that is something that needs to be taken into consideration. And that's all I have for today.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for your comments. And we'll take the next set of comments.
Absolutely. Alston Thomas, your line is open.
This is Alston Thomas. I presume that's who we're talking about.
Yes.
Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. I'm an archaeologist, practicing archaeologist in Texas for a number of decades. I teach at Texas A&M. I know a number of people on the advisory committee. In fact, I've served on the committee myself in the past. That being said, and with all due respect to proper archaeological procedures for exhumation of graves, an issue I would argue is that this permit be denied until such time that consultation with the most likely descendant groups be considered. And that those groups, Top Pilam, has a long history of working with the city, that concept be introduced and Top Pilam have a voice in this. Two, that DNA be conducted on the remains, on each and every set of remains. And since that is excluded from this permit application, that's where my opposition comes from. And I would also weigh in on the concept that the optics of this is poor, because the optics of this continues to push aside and stress the inequality of the most likely groups to be related to those heard at Barrero are purposefully excluded, and I believe that's wrong. That's the end of my comment. Thank you.
Dr. Thomas, thank you for those comments. We're ready for the next set.
Absolutely. Once again, if you do want to make a comment, please hit 10. Our next comment comes from the line of Carla Aguilar. Your line is open. Carla, your line's open.
Thank you, everyone. Good afternoon. My name is Carla Aguilar. I am a member of the Tepilam Coahuiltecan Nation, and I am here to speak in opposition to this permit application to a committee of professionals who dignify the work and all the sacrifices that they've made to hold these seats and make decisions on behalf of the public interest in alignment with the laws and the standards of your various professions. The archaeologists who are working on this project are aware of all of the concerns of our community, and the isolation and marginalization of our voices in this scenario, just as was stated a moment ago, is not only a matter of optics, but a matter of setting a precedent for the work that you as an antiquities committee does by acknowledging that very close, certain lineal descendants are being set aside in the determination of what happens with their ancestral remains. Aside from the decision being made outside of a public forum, I understand you're doing the best you can given the technological advances that we have to do the best that you can to include people, and I'm very grateful for that. But again, without this including proper discussion, given how contentious all of this is, There are internal decision-making processes that have been set forth by the Alamo Trust that the archaeologist team is abiding by, but those are inherently flawed because they are isolating the people that are the direct lineal descendants of there. This would be unconscionable at any other site, and implore the Antiquities Committee to delay this decision. Or deny it altogether until decisions are made within the Alamo Trust to include lineal descendants. And for the Antiquities Committee to consider the weight of this decision given the circumstances. And and that's all I'd like to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am, for your comments. Ready for the next comment?
Cindy Gaskill, your line is open.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, thank you for allowing us to speak today. My ancestor also fought and died at the Alamo, and I'm speaking today to encourage the commission to deny this permit. I'm very concerned that no DNA testing is going to take place. And I have noticed there's just an inequitable treatment of found remains when they're discovered across the state of Texas. In Sugarland, in 2019, 95 bodies were found in an unknown. They were developing this land for the Fort Bend ISD. Since that time, the Texas Historical Commission has allowed and is supporting DNA testing of that site and the research of that site. On the Fort Bend ISD website, it states that they refer to these bodies found as the Sugarland 95. It says, prior to each reburial, each gravesite and burial vessel was marked so individuals could be reunified with family should descendants be identified by DNA in the future. Why am I being denied this possibility of being reunified with my ancestor? Are my ancestors' remains less important? Please vote to deny this permit. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments. Next set of comments.
Yes, that we have one line left, and that's Lee White. Your line is open.
Yes, Lee White, president of the Alamo Defender Descendants Association. We represent all the direct bloodline of the garrison. Back in July 2019, we came before you with evidence of a burial inside the church. And in December of 2019, a burial was found in Burial 2, Unit 5, hardware, nails, and remnants of a coffin. And in that coffin, only two femur bones were found, which is consistent with our archival research of partial remains being found by the U.S. Army. We're asking for DNA testing. Be done as what is currently being proposed would not be able to identify that that is an Alamo defender. So, again, we ask this permit be denied and the families be included as well as DNA testing. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Okay. For anybody else that has a comment, it's 1-0. And you have no further comments.
Okay, thank you. Okay, at this point, I'll open it up for general discussion among the Antiquities Advisory Board members. Do we have comments?
Mr. Chairman, this is Doug Boyd. And I wanted to first ask a quick question on the urgency of getting the remains out of the ground. It's my understanding that these units are still open and that the longer they're open, the more likely there could be additional moisture-related impacts to the foundation. Is that correct, Steve?
Yes, that is correct, Doug. The units are temporarily covered right now just to prevent a massive moisture loss. But the longer the units remain in that condition, the more likely that the condition of the remains will suffer. And more importantly also, the more likely that the instrumentation that needs to be installed in order to begin collecting data on the conditions of the foundations and moisture variability will lag. And the sooner all of that begins, the sooner we start getting data that will be important to figuring out how to address the conditions at the site.
Thank you, Steve. That was my understanding, and I totally agree with that line of logic. The second thing I would like to ask is, in the permit application, why is there no DNA analysis going on the assumption that it's going to be totally destructive of all the bone? Oftentimes, DNA can be destructive of a small bone or a small piece of bone and get results, but it's not destroying the entire skeleton. And since we don't know the extent of any of these remains, they haven't been brought out of the ground, could that decision on DNA analysis not be deferred until the remains are out of the ground and each one is assessed individually?
Well, at this point, there is no DNA at all to be done, at least according to the original proposals by the Advisory Council. And I can I can ask or would like to ask Christy to address specifically her discussions with the Advisory Council members on the Alamo Mission Archaeological Advisory Council to provide the background for that decision.
I would like to just point out that we've heard from both the descendants of the Native Americans who are likely buried there and descendants of the Alamo defenders who are likely buried there, and they all seem to be in favor of the DNA analysis. So go ahead, Christy. Sorry.
So, yes, I was in a lot of discussions with the representative of six different federally recognized tribes that are making up the Archaeology Advisory Committee, and what is interesting is that all six tribes have the same idea, is that the destructive analysis of DNA testing is actually against religious and cultural beliefs. A lot of it has to do with the fact that by doing DNA testing, the perspective is that reduces the individual's to a biology rather than a cultural affiliation, and they feel like the tribal nations should be the ones in charge of determining who is part of their tribes and how their affiliation is determined, not by DNA but by culture. And so I have six different tribes who have the same feeling, and on doing additional research, a large majority of the federally recognized tribes do feel the same way. There is some difference in opinions, but the fact that we had these six different groups all come to the same conclusion is what has influenced us to continue with the idea that DNA testing should not be done.
Christy, this is Jim Perseth. I have a question to you pertaining to this. And given this, how is it that these individual representatives, which I agree with their perspectives and understand, are also speaking for remains that may not be Native American?
Well, and that's one of the cases that we're trying to use the different morphological analyses to determine whether cultural affiliation or ancestral affiliation can be determined. I think beyond that, the committee is open to other suggestions if we can truly identify that from the analyses that they are not part of a Native American community.
Yeah, I think the difficulty
but
there
again,
is
again, I don't speak
data.
For... I'm sorry?
Yeah. Jim, it's a very good question that you raise, and I think one of the issues that's related to it is at this point, we do not have the affiliation based on skeletal morphology. Unfortunately, the skeletal many of these remains, as I've indicated, are very fragmentary. We will have few opportunities, I believe, at least in the remains that we have to date, to find the right pieces of elements and measure them to provide us morphometric information related to ancestry. And short of that, we have to assume that all of the remains that we excavate are potentially Native American. Therefore, although there might be, and clearly are, probably remains of other ancestries in the burial population, which are, of those are Native and which are you know, Spanish descent or otherwise, we could not, at this point at least, on the four skeletal remains that we have determined, so that we could separate perhaps a subsection or subpopulation and say, okay, these don't look Native American, therefore it would be okay to do DNA analysis.
And I do want to add here...
question.
Oh, sorry.
Hello.
If I can add just one more point real quick. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, this is John Lowe's. I have a question. I don't know if there's anybody from the GLO or if Christy can, from the Alamo Trust can answer. Is there a reason why none of the most probable lineal descendants were included in the committee to dialogue and communicate about this issue?
In the formation of the committee, I reached out to the federal recognized tribes that had cultural ties to Bexar County. And in doing so, we actually were able to show ties to the Alamo and the vicinity directly. In discussions with them, it was upon their recommendation that the only members of the committee be from federally recognized tribes.
My understanding is that there's no legal requirement. This isn't a NAGPRA project, so there's no legal requirement to consult with Native American tribes. Is that true? So this is done voluntarily or proactively?
We are working in the spirit of NAGPRA.
But there's no requirement to follow the letter of the law of NAGPRA, but working within the spirit is advisable.
It is advisable, and it was an agreement that the GLO had come to with the committee, that we feel that the best practice at this point is to be working in the spirit of NAGPRA.
My point is that with this process that was created from the beginning, I think that project sponsors had gone out of their way to exclude most probable lineal descendants, and that includes non-federally recognized tribes. This is a major sort of glaring issue, and Native American archaeology consultation practices in North America, but not only Native Americans, but I understand that the Alamo Defenders, the Descendant Association, has also been excluded. And I think excluding the most likely lineal descendants is not in the spirit of NAGPRA. And so to me, it's a glaring issue for this project that consultation was proactively undertaken on a voluntary basis, which I think is commendable. But the way that the consultation was practiced or structured reinforces some of the racial problems and helps further drive the parties apart because there's a lack of trust and engagement on a meaningful basis. I think that the Native American consultation and the lineal descendant consultation, to kind of cast that blanket more widely, causes some serious problems because the voices for people who are most likely associated with these remains are not being allowed part of the discussion.
This is Doug Boyd again, and I agree with John's statement.
Yes.
This is Bob Ward. I have a question on these. When you exhume these bodies, say we do exhume the bodies, and how far are you going to take these units down? Are you going to put equipment in there? And then my other question is, how long will the equipment be in there permanently, or is there a reason that the remains can't be replaced?
Good questions. And as far as we know, the bottom of the foundation, which is where we need to be archaeologically so that the preservation team can examine the foundation and in install their instrumentation, the bottom of the foundation is roughly around 175 to 180 centimeters below surface. All of the burial remains that we have are above that bottom elevation, so therefore they would be impacted by anybody working within those units to install the equipment and also to make the observations with regards to the structural integrity of the foundation. Our recommendation is to remove them so that they would not be harmed or endangered or accidentally impacted by the work that occurs within the units. The equipment, once installed, it's small electronic sensors that are connected with wiring, and so eventually those wires will have to be removed. I do not know from an architectural point of view whether we would need to excavate the entire unit back up. I kind of doubt that. We could probably excavate a portion of the unit to remove the equipment if needed. But right now, for the installation of the equipment, as well as sampling of some of the mortar and rock conditions and such, the remains are basically in the way of harm.
But what would preclude them from going back in afterwards?
Nothing. Christy can answer that, and our goal is to, at the time of the reburial, for the remains to be reburied potentially in an area that is free of human remains, and in an area where no future excavations would need to be done at all, in order to make sure that they are not disturbed a second or third time down the line, if such repeated excavations would be needed in a certain area.
And Steve is correct. The instrumentation that's being placed in is going to be placed inside of bore holes that are probably no bigger than, I want to say, 4 centimeters in diameter into the wall, and attached by wires. From what I understand, those sensors will be registering data for at least 18 months to be collected, but they will continue to register data for as many years as they're left in there. At this time, there is no plan to remove them and have to bring it up, but there is the idea that if there is structural issues with the foundation, that anything that's right up against the foundation has the potential for being impacted again. So we would like to make sure that wherever the burials are reburied will be in an area that will not be impacted in the future.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
This is Laurie Limbacher. I have a couple of questions.
Yes, please.
I read through the report, and it's not entirely clear to me. Have excavations been made in all 8 of the locations shown on Figure 3 in the report from Robba Kissner, or did work stop once these remains were found in 4, 5, and 2, I think, is where they are?
Yes. Thank you for that question, and I'm sorry we did not make that clear. The excavations in the other units, there was Unit 7, Unit 1, and 3 on the outside of the south wall of the church, and Unit 7 on the inside in one of the rooms across from Unit 8. Those excavations have been completed, as well as Unit 8. Those excavations, because they were three units were outside of the foundation, we did not encounter any remains. We encountered massive amounts of disturbance, but those were the only units that allowed us to continue with the excavations to the bottom of the foundation so that we would know what depth we would need to penetrate on the inside in order to expose the full face of the foundation. However, as you remarked, the excavations have stopped in all of the units that are inside of the church footprint, with the exception of 7 again, where human remains have been encountered.
All right, and the second question, the report also refers to a proposed location for reburial within the footprint of the building, and it describes it as something labeled as the monk's burial ground. Going back to Figure 3 in the report, is that the room that is labeled MBR?
Yes, it is. And that room has an interesting history, if I may just take a moment. It is an interesting history because until about 1756, that space that is now enclosed by the north wall and west wall of that room was an open space.
Right.
Yeah, that was an exterior space. And then when they enclosed it in, after 1756, it became an internal inside space. And we were, to be honest, surprised that we did find remains in Unit 6 that is in that space. But we found no such remains at all in Unit 7, also in that same area.
Okay. And then one other question. Specific to the scope of this permit application, the report on page 3, just above figure 3, includes a reference that the request is to formally request approval to exhume intentional burials that have been or may be encountered within the units currently under excavation. And then the application itself on page, or under section 2, refers to the scope of work as removal of burials encountered during the work associated with permit 8713. I would like to have a clear understanding of whether you anticipate that you might encounter other incidences of burials or remains that you assume would be covered under the scope of this permit that we are considering today, or whether the scope of the permit that we are considering today is specific to the locations identified in your report?
Again, a very good question, and I appreciate the seeking clarification. Our perspective is that because in at least two or three of the units, Units 2, Unit 4, and perhaps Unit 5, we are still pretty high above the terminal depth at 175 to 180 centimeters below surface before we reach the bottom of the foundation. There is a chance, I do not know the likelihood, percentage likelihood, but there is a chance that there might be other burials, human remains, that we would find below the ones that we've identified to date. And therefore, our thought process was that it would be best to include potential remains that are found during the process of the removal of the current identified four remains, as well as during the process of continuing the excavations down to that expected terminal depth of 175 centimeters, rather than having to come back at a later date and ask the advisory board and the executive committee to grant yet another permit or amend the current permit for the exhumation of those other remains. So it's a cautionary step on our part, and perhaps a time-saving step, if you would like.
I see. So you envision that it has the potential to be open-ended within the areas identified in those eight locations. And what is number 19 there in the center of the doorway?
Very good. Number 19 is a tiny unit that's measured maybe 24 inches by approximately 14, 16 inches. It was placed in the doorway of the church, attempting to locate a threshold stone to identify where the original surface of the area entering into the correct. Unfortunately, it was right in the middle of the foundation, and we did not find a threshold, and we found nothing but foundation material because the unit is too small, and we were limited really by the amount of disturbance we wanted to create and get in the way of visitors to the site. And so we tried to have a small peak. Unfortunately, the peak was too small, and we never got the information that we were seeking.
So has that excavation been closed up?
Yes, it was actually photographed, and then it was closed up. And recently the pavers have been installed on it, and now it's hard to tell that there was ever an excavation there.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I have a quick question. Bob Ward.
Yes, Bob.
Will there be, as part of this permit, will there be any other units added to it? I mean, I'm looking at this, and I can't imagine sinking five units and hitting four bodies. So we have to assume that entire floor is one cemetery, correct?
That, you know, that the statistics definitely would suggest that. I would agree with that. At the current time, there are no additional excavations planned for the purposes of the current study, the preservation study, and the installation of the instrumentation that the preservationists are seeking.
Okay. I was just curious, because I played Battleship as a kid. I don't think I've ever been that good.
Yeah, I agree.
Mr. Chair, this is Laurie Limbacher again. I assume if there was an interest in doing some exploration in other locations, that would trigger a new permit application. Is that correct, Jim? Commissioner Brissette?
I think that would be the case. But Brad, what's your take on that?
Laurie, I think the answer to that question is it would depend on the nature of the investigations. If it was some additional investigation directly related to the ongoing architectural investigations, we might consider it as an amendment to that existing permit. However, if it's for a different purpose or different reasons, we would require a different permit.
Yeah. If I may just jump in, we have that 8713 permit number, which initially, the request was for a large number of units. We've amended that to include Unit 19, as you pointed out, and one other unit at the south end of the long barrack, Unit 9B. So potentially that permit could serve the exact purposes Dr. Jones mentioned. But at this point, really nobody has on their radar anything imminent or anything in the plans, besides the units we've already excavated.
Brad, I would think also if it's this is an unlikely situation, but concerning Commissioner Limbacher's question, it would be the amount of additional work that would be proposed for inside the church that would potentially trigger a new permit, giving the AAB another opportunity to understand what's being proposed and look at the implications of it for the any burials that are there and any other archaeological deposits.
No, I think that's correct. It would obviously depend on what the actual request was. And any major divergence, we would potentially consider a different permit.
Yeah.
Right.
And if I may as well, one of the critical aspects that we're facing right now, and I believe the preservation team is facing right now as well with these units, is we have kind of half of the picture of what's going on with the foundations and the conditions of the foundations. And most of that picture is what happens on the outside of the foundations. We really do not know, because the units inside the church have human remains in them, with the exception of Unit 7. We do not know what the picture is like on the inside of the foundation and inside of the footprint of the church. And so it would be very difficult, I believe, to come up with an adequate and well-thought-out preservation plan for the church itself, not knowing half of the picture of what is going on with the foundations. New conditions outside of the wall are very, very different, we assume, than the conditions inside of the church. And so it really becomes critical to really know, to be able to put together a full picture of what goes on with the foundations, what are the conditions that are impacting it, and how those conditions vary inside, outside, and around the perimeter of the building itself. And there's no way we're going to be able to accomplish that under the current conditions.
Rick Lewis here. Following up on those lines, sort of where Laurie was taking the conversation previously, have any preliminary measurements of moisture content exterior from the test pits, as would compare to the interior digs, have any preliminary assessments been made that would start to give us a picture of maybe the severity of the moisture content inside to outside?
There have been. The data is being collected in those units where inside ambient humidity is being collected. And we've seen in areas, for instance, in the vicinity of excavation unit 1 and 2, in the late 90s, there was a Monel plate, a steel plate that was installed through the foundation at that point along the south transept, and immediately impacted the moisture conditions below the plate, in that the plate stopped moisture from migrating up through the wall. But it resulted in basically a really moist area that impacted heavily the lower portion of the foundation below that Monel plate, whereas up above it, it kept the moisture dry, but it created other problems because now suddenly there was that difference in moisture content within the walls. We've also seen a difference in the north wall of the church between units 7 and 8, where moisture conditions, when it rained and accidentally the surface outside in the vicinity of unit 8, became wet, that moisture migrated in through the walls, and approximately a third, maybe a little bit more of that, impacted not just the the surrounding surface on the inside, but also impacted the strength of the stones that make up the foundation in that vicinity. So we know that moisture is migrating laterally when it rains, and we also know that moisture is migrating vertically, from below the foundation up into the foundations and up the wall. So it's a very serious issue, I think, that the preservationists will have to deal with.
I think it does beg the question, and this is an early one and not directly related, but I think I would suggest that looking out into the future and the admitted likelihood that the nave is going to have many more burials and therefore pose some extreme challenges for any kind of large excavation interior to address the very thing you're mentioning, there may be the need to look at precedents around the world and other places of religious sites, churches, if you will, that have faced this very circumstance, and start to think about a strategy. While it may not be ideal, the likelihood that the exterior infiltration of moisture through the walls, which I would argue is the most challenging and the most evident, may be one of the ultimate ways to deal with the moisture migration. It may have to be taken on more from an exterior treatment as an architectural decision, and as opposed to the most ideal approach to arresting the migration. Because this is going to be something, I don't think, at the conclusion of this permit, that's going to be perhaps go away, and so I think it is something that worthy looking ahead. I don't know if that's been discussed. I'm sure it has been discussed in the various circles, but I would just pose that as a thought.
No, those are very good points again. And the purpose of the installation of some of that instrumentation that we've been speaking about is exactly that, to gauge lateral moisture movement, to gauge vertical moisture movement, to gauge humidity within the walls, which are sort of two courses of stone with rubble in between them. There are just so many aspects that the preservationist team is really looking at and is hoping to really gain and collect data from, that will allow them to then look at the data in many different ways and consider how to best help the building. So yeah, those are all very good points, and it's a complex project. It's a complex project with a lot of moving parts and a lot of factors, including traffic, including soil conditions, including subsurface water movement, you name it. This building at this site has it.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
Members, any other comments?
Mr. Chairman, this is Doug Boyd, and this is a question for Steve and Christy, and this is a hypothetical question. If I did three things to this permit application, and I'll tell you what those are in just a second, would it hamper your ability to move forward with this project and get your work done that you need to do. And those three things would be, one, remove the language on specifically where the remains are going to be reburied. Two, remove the language as it is on no DNA. And three, replace that with the creation of an advisory committee specific to the burials that are known and likely inside the chapel and the related rooms. And that advisory committee would include the Alamo Defenders Association and Top Pilam and others. In other words, if you did all of that and this permit moved forward, then you could go ahead and do your work, and then the decisions on what's going to happen with the remains and whether DNA is appropriate or not could become part of what this advisory committee has a role in.
Yeah. From an archaeological perspective, Doug, I don't see any problem with removing or tabling those issues with regards to the reburial location with regards to DNA from an archaeological perspective, because from an archaeological perspective, I'm just looking at technical aspects. So for me, it would not preempt any additional work that really it does need to take place. Christy should speak to those issues, and the broader picture from, the other perspectives.
I know this would be a change from the earlier position, but what is your thought on that, Christy?
So, I mean, I understand where you're coming from. I do see this as rejecting the point of view of our federally recognized tribal groups that are represented. And one of the issues that we do see is that we're trying to reach out to the communities, the federally recognized tribes that are related to the Alamo, and they had a very strong feeling about the DNA testing. And so I don't feel comfortable saying that we should take it out of the permit. One of the other things, too, is that so at least with the Mescalero Apache, they do have a cultural tie to the Valero. We do see them represented in the burial records as the Lipan Apache. But also what we've encountered is that if we do include some of the outside groups, with specific regards even to Tapulam, they had proposed a protocol that would actually void any voice from anybody other than theirs. They would have precluded the federally recognized tribes as well as any other community that wanted to be heard in here. So where I do think it would be great to have additional voices, and if you read the Human Remains Protocol, we are not excluding people from the reburial process. We are not excluding any, input when it comes to there. What we find is that when we start opening it up to much more, we have rejected the views of some people who have been very good allies in helping us trying to come up with great ways of respectfully treating the archaeological project and the human remains that we're encountering. So, again, it's a difficult situation.
Yes, it is.
With regards to the reburial location, we would prefer that it is within the footprint of the church. We do believe that that's where they should be reinterred.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, I bring up my comment. Jim Brissett here. I bring up my comment I made earlier that it seems like we're relying pretty heavily upon the Native American representatives that are making decisions on remains that may not be Native American, and an issue that I think is important to point out.
Yeah.
And from what
Mr. Chairman,
let me just real quickly say, and based upon what Dr. Tomka said, the preservation of the remains is sufficiently poor that we're probably not going to be able to get the ancestry of the remains based upon traditional bioarchaeological methods.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, can it be worded where if there's any question on the ancestry, then DNA testing will not be done. But if you can ascertain that it is a non-Native American that you will do the DNA testing? Is there some way to word that?
And, Mr. Chairman, may I comment on this?
Yes.
This is Mark.
Well,
Because of the questions that are coming up, I just wanted to make it clear that the Historical Commission's authority is limited to consideration of the factors that are in the State Antiquities Code. We cannot deny a permit because DNA testing isn't being contemplated, and we can't deny a permit because we think a particular group of people should be consulted. Those are matters that we should express our opinions on, and they're things that we have brought up to the GLO since the beginning of this project. But at the end of the day, the decision to issue or not issue a permit cannot be based on those matters. That's it.
Okay. I think we've heard quite a bit of discussion here. Yes.
This is John Lewis again. So I'm looking at our meeting packet, and I see one suggested motion, which is in favor of granting this permit. And typically for issues like this, there's a couple of opportunities or options on the table for the Antiquities Advisory Board members to read and evaluate. Sort of following up on Doug's question, if some of us had problems being forced to choose between a conservation priority with the church and what is best practice in terms of including lineal descendants, and we didn't want to support this motion, what alternatives are available to us? Can you help us in that way?
Yes, I think what we will do is that we have the motion before us, and then if a member wants to amend that motion, we can actually vote on this motion, and we can vote on the alternative motion. So given that, why don't we start, and let me start with the motion that's before us, and let me read the motion. Move that the Antiquities Advisory Board send forth to the Executive Committee and recommend approval of the issuance of archaeological permit number. The number will be determined for archaeological estimation of the four interments located in Alamo Church 41BX6 for a period of 10 years. After the following minor modifications to the scope of work are accepted by the THC staff, I will read the modifications, and I know, Brad, that we've already received some of these, but I'll list them all out. Information addressing how in-situ measurements and photography will be employed as field methodologies, the physical size of the preservation instruments that are being installed in the open excavations, and how and when certain analytical methods will be employed during the osteological analysis, and a list of project archaeologists on their qualifications is given. We have that motion. Would a member like to suggest an alternative motion?
I'd like to suggest an amendment to the suggested motion, if that's okay, and that the to that long list of items that the THC is requesting, we add that the Alamo Trust include the most probable lineal descendants in their consultation.
We can
recommend that, but we can't require it.
Yeah. And then...
Excuse me, Jim.
Yes.
Can you tell me who made that amendment?
John Lowe.
John Lowe.
Thank you.
Any other amendments to the motion?
Say again the amendment. It's that it would recommend that the Alamo Trust include lineal descendants in what, the committee or the process or the advisory committee?
The most probable lineal descendants are included in the process of determining the disposition of the excavated remains.
Okay, we have two motions before us. Then we have the original motion I read, and we have the motion I read with the amendment to it. Would a member like to move forward either of the motions?
Mr. Chairman, this is Doug Boyd, and I will move forward the amended motion by John Loth.
I will second Bob Ward.
Members, any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying yes.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. Thank you, members, very much for that. That was a excellent discussion and excellent questions, and I think we thoroughly considered the issue. At this point, agenda item 3 is adjournment, and I'd like an ask, like to ask a member to move adjournment.
So moved.
Yeah, do we have a second?
Yes.
Second.
Second.
We are adjourned. Thank you all very much. I think these kinds of meetings are probably in store for the future of AAB, given where we are, but it's worked out well, and I thank everybody for their time and their great input. And members of the public, thank you for your comments.
Thank you,
Jim.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Have a great afternoon.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Happy quarter.
Bye-bye.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation using AT&T. You may now disconnect.